Blog Talk Radio.
Let's go. Yeah. Ghetto children singing. See, they eager to learn how to become the next world leaders. Brave hearts. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off it. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off it. Book one, strategy, tactics, techniques. Look dumb, but massively notice the weakness in all of them. Gotta use it only if necessary. Homie, vestige is very real if enemies carrying heavy steel. Beware the thugs who ain't scared of blood or jail time. When Aryan nations ain't having integration, we so blind of beauty of life. Was when my mom said, again, you could be Christ. I wasn't old enough to hold my d***ing P-Right. Jesus, what is he like? I picture him standing with diamonds on him, little different from the way my mommy saw him. Practice your aiming, physical training in difficult terraining. Test your endurance, try to keep your stamina banging, splitting duchess up, strap up. The armies of school, teaching smart ways to go. I'm thinking Gandhi was a fool, the chronic's a fool. Got me thinking out loud. Sleep on my drunkenness, I'll blow your brains out. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
My revolution is as real as Bobby Seals. I build with dudes and Chris worth a quarter mil and Dick Hill. For fish gills, the cops, the time come, I mask up and get my comrade off the bus. Up the beef, I snatch a seed from Chuck E. Cheese and feed them to the rats in the back of the peas. Black fatigue and office scenes on a sofa, 50-inch flat screen, Louis Vuitton holsters. My motions don't appeal to appellate division. I did it strong for 7 long years in prison. Up the system, I'm like a modern-day Hitler. A black gorilla, crib and blood and one only. Just know my face, I be the case for the wish at the police. Look at the name Lake, go simultaneously with street revolution. 21 gun salute, the new Huey Newton.
Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Teach our woman how to hold a family down in case something happens to us fathers. Protect the children, grab revolvers. The woman plays an important part of our life force. So what we fight for, my heart goes to you, beautiful wife in war.
And listen more and talk less. Watch all and trust none. Demand your respect and be ready to die for what you believe in. And ride all the time, not just when convenient.
Justice and freedom, wisdom and understanding. We the lost children of Israel in this Western world region. You ain't a man, you a coward if you can't support the girl you put a seed in.
Strong rule the weak, but the wise rule is strong. It's more to a war than just getting it on. Seal your form, cover your tracks, stay prepared. I don't care, no one's spared.
Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer.
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mitch Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over!
Mr. Jackson, sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see you today.
by Eric's.
Starring Gary Dordan from TV CSI.
This is the military, David.
Free the line. Revolutionary greetings. Welcome to the audition, Jordan, MS Radio. I'm your host, Blue Mind is Secure, where our goals are fivefold. Our first goal is to eradicate functional illiteracy among new African prisoners. Our second goal is to eradicate cultural ignorance among new African prisoners. Our third goal is to transfer the criminal mentality to the new African mentality. Our fourth goal is to assist in rebuilding, stabilization of new African communities, with our fifth goal to put out new African prisoners for release, producing new African citizens. And our overall goal is transferring the whole entire free industrial slavery complex, which is the prison complex, the mass incarceration, into a new African revolution national way of thinking, to a revolutionary mind state that's progressive and productive to the people. First, I want to say free land to identify with land, revolutionary greeting, free out of political prison, free out of POW, free out of new catching new African citizens. Tonight is a very, very special broadcast. We're going to be dealing with the shutdown demonstration in regard to political prison and other aspects. And we're going to have a moderator, which is Mama Fia Wangaza, who's a pioneer in the struggle, who has a lot of history with the legal aspect, the attorney aspect, you have the attorney dealing with political prisoners and Geneva Conventions and international law, so forth and so on. Then some of the panel is going to be like Bible Faith Wangaza, who's a revolutionary activist, who's still active right now to this particular day. Another panel we're going to have is another political prisoner, Bob Messiah Hosey, who's also active in New African Independent Movement, still does the work. Another person we're going to have is Bob Jahan Abdul Mumit, who's a political prisoner, who's also the chair of Jericho, who's very active today. Another person we're going to have is Brother Kevin Steele, who's an active filmmaker who has various contributions in regard to videography with various organizations, Jericho Amnesty, as well as the Move Family and other people, and currently working on the documentary now that dealing with political prison and mass incarceration. And I think it's entitled Move Me or something like that. But about it. Okay, hold up. I might say they can't hear me. But it's going to be a special panel, so I'm going to open up the line, turn over to Mama Fia. So Mama Fia and the panel, so she started the question and answer. Hold on. Okay, Mama Fia, your line up. I'm going to open everybody's line up. Okay, I'm going to open everybody's line up. But I didn't mean necessary, Mama. I'm going to open everybody's line up.
It's my pleasure and my honor to be with you all this evening, especially given the subject matter.
True, and it's always a pleasure, Mom.
I wanted to have your lines open, brother.
Go ahead, Mama B. Go ahead.
Can you let me know who all is on the line at this point?
We have Bob Jahad. We have brother Kevin Steele. We have let's see. Like I just seen Bob Seiko. Hold up. We have Bob Seiko. Bob Seiko is online, and we have Bob Messiah. Everybody's online.
Wonderful.
Everybody's online. Line is open, so go ahead.
Okay.
Everybody's line is open.
So, again, I want to give the revolutionary call of free to land and revolutionary greetings. Assalamu alaikum. Praise the Lord for those others of us who practice and other spiritual belief system, and Hotep, as well as What's Up for the youngins among us. Tonight, the question is political prisoners intensifying resistance against genocide. And we have the good fortune of having with us folk who have been on both sides of the wall and who are working to intensify the resistance against genocide on both sides of the wall. I'd like to start first with doing a round of a two-minute round where each one of you will introduce yourselves and to the organization or issue or individuals that you are representing here tonight. If we would begin with Baba Masai.
Oh, okay. Assalamu alaikum and free the land.
By any means, Mr. Sir.
Okay. My name is Masai Ehehozi. A brief background, a former prisoner of war. I'm a citizen of the Republic of North Africa. In 1975, along with Sister Sophia Bakari, we raised the issue of being citizens of the Republic of North Africa and members of the Black Liberation Army. And at that time, we said that, you know, we felt the U.S. had no jurisdiction over us. I should also say, like, at the present time, I'm also on the advisory board for Jericho Amnesty Movement for political prisoners and prisoners of war. I am first and foremost, I am a Muslim. I'm among those Muslims who believe we have an obligation to struggle against all forms of oppression. I think the bio also listed I'm a part member of Masjid Al-Kabar. So in that regard, you know, I do work insofar as possible on behalf of my imam, Imam Ali Kaba, also known as Jeff Ford, brother named Malmeem Kabar, who's captured in my house in 1995 and also raised the issue of being a citizen of the Republic of North Africa. And some joint work around Brother Larry Hoover. And I should mention, one of the things the bio don't say is that among the priorities for us, for myself, many of us, myself included, is work around Imam Jamil Abdullah El-Amin. And more visible work on my behalf was done in the early days, along with a lot of the work that was done by Jericho, which a lot of folks aren't aware of. And I think that's particularly significant because along with the others, Imam Jamil has always worked to internationalize the struggle of the oppressed. And when you bring up the subject of abolition, which is also within one of them first questions, to me, Imam Jamil El-Amin was one of the ones who sought to bring together different statements, particularly in the Islamic community.
Let's come back to the full. At this point, we're just asking for introduce yourself.
Okay.
So let's go to Baba Sekou Odinga.
Okay. Assalamu alaikum. Free the land. My name is Sekou Ungabazi Abdullah Odinga. I'm a original member of the New York State Black Panther Party and the international section of the Black Panther Party and a soldier of the Black Liberation Army. I'm currently one of the leadership of the Northeast Political Prisoner Coalition. I'm working with the Spirit of Mandela International Tribunal that we plan to have in October of this coming year. And I work in behalf of in support of all of our political prisoners, especially those who were formerly Black Panther Party, Black Liberation Army, and those who fought with them, such as David Gilbert. I guess as far as introduction, I could say a whole lot more, but I'll stop there.
We'll come back. Baba Jihad Abdul-Mumi, co-chair of the National Jericho Movement for Amnesty and Release of U.S. Political Prisoners and Prisoners of War.
Yes, thank you, sister. My name is Jihad Abdul-Mumi. I am the chairperson of the National Jericho Movement. I'm also a formerly member of the Black Panther Party. We had a chapter in Plainfield, New Jersey. I live in Richmond, Virginia now. I'm also on the coordinating committee of the 2021 International Tribunal that Brother Seiko just now spoke about. And I guess we'll be talking more about that later on in the program. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Brother Kevin Steele.
It's a lot. It wasn't that so good when it's on this post. But I'm a part of Luton Branch, LYC, formerly known as IWOC, Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee. I'm also a part of the campaign of Rainbow Meal Home, as well as I work like close with In the Spirit of Mandela. I'm on the media committee, as well as Eyes on You, new immigration outlet in the Bronx. That's really in New York City. That's really demanding for the shutdown of the island and all the juvenile detention centers throughout the city. And I'll go more into that later on.
Thank you. Brother Kevin's voice sounded kind of fuzzy to me. I'm not sure whether that's my phone or if...
It's probably my headphones.
Yeah.
I have, like, bad headphones.
Okay, so when you're speaking, if you would keep...
Do you want me to say it again?
Would you please...
Okay. Do you hear me better?
Very clear.
All right. So, yes. Assalamu alaikum. And peace and blessings and freedom land, everyone. My name is Kevin Steele. I'm a part of Root and Branch, formerly known as IWA, as well as the campaign to bring Mumia home. And I'm on a media committee for the Inner Spirit of Mandela campaign, as well as Eyes on You and NYC.
Thank you. One of the primary questions that we have is how can abolitionists intensify resistance in a more tactical and strategic manner? And given Baba Seku Odinga's 34 years on the inside, working with folk on the outside as well as the inside, how would you answer that question given your experience?
Well, I'm not sure when you say the abolitionist movement, I'm not sure who that is, but in general, I think we... What we have to do is, as Brother Stokely, Kwame Nkrumah used to always say, is organize, organize, organize. We have to organize ourselves and our people to struggle to change the conditions that our political prisoners are under, and by any and every means, work towards bringing them home. You know, there are many different ways we can aid in that struggle, you know, such as helping the lawyers where they need, the resources that they need, helping the political prisoners themselves with the resources and support that they need, helping their families who need to visit them and keep their head above the water, you know, helping them survive by any means. So in terms of abolition, I do believe in the complete abolishment of prisons, but that cannot be talked about without talking about how are we going to deal with our anti social behavior within our community, and what do we build? How do we organize, as I just said, organization and structure to deal with whatever's going to take the place of prisons, police, etc. Because you can't talk about the abolition of prisons without talking about the abolition of the so-called police departments as we know them. So in short, that's kind of how I would try to answer that question.
You raised a point that often comes up when we talk about abolition of police and prisons, and that is interpersonal self and other destructive behavior. Would you talk a little bit about that and how you see us being able to address that?
Well, I haven't really put a lot of thought in how to address it, but clearly we have to be able to deal with our own antisocial behaviors. And again, I say you have to organize for it. So we have to bring our elders and our thinkers together to sit down and ask this question that you are asking us right now on how can we create organization that will allow us to deal with the antisocial behavior. I know that would have to take in a whole lot of other things. We're talking about mental health now. We're talking about different kinds of drug abuse, alcohol abuse, and how do we deal with helping our people get off of those substances, you know. So it's just such a encompassing question that I just don't see how to answer it in short, you know. But other than us coming together, sitting down as a people, as a community, as a country, as a nation, sitting down and putting our better thinkers' minds to creating organization and structure that will allow us to deal with that. Me, myself, I haven't really put that much thought in it to give you a really good comprehensive answer on that.
Baba Masai, Imam Abdul Malik Kabah, formerly known as Jeff Fort, along with Larry Hoover and Melvin Mays, were among some of the folk who did deal with that question in previous years, converting folk from the criminal mind to the revolutionary mind. Would you talk about some of the things that were done that ultimately benefited the community and created the kind of atmosphere that made them a target for the system?
Okay, and thank you, Sister Fair. You actually remember among the things that they did were like seek to establish community programs, and this is something too. A lot of people seem to forget that, well, like when Imam Malik and some others were out there and active, like Chicago, and this was a major thing actually. That when they were out there, one of the things they had said, they had looked at what crack cocaine had done to other parts of the U.S. at a time when, you know, our people were going through another one of them revolutionary surges. And, like, what was happening was that communities were being flooded with crack, what they said was that crack can come into Chicago, along with other, you know, other formations at the time, like Growth and Development, or what would become Growth and Development, the Vice Lord. And so they kept crack out there, and at the same time tried to make sure or try to get resources into those communities. They were involved in activities like along with marching with King, but that wasn't just marching for the sake of marching. It was to like to improve the overall situation of our people in those communities. It was demonstrating or supporting work to make sure that if buildings or housing went up in our communities, that our people would be among those who were, you know, given the jobs. At that time, it was a lot of times it was going to unions that weren't people that looked like us, didn't live in our community, and that's when the money was working. That's also during the time that that the city with Mayor Daley of Chicago at that time, even though the work was improving and organizing certain people in the community, Mayor Daley decided that's when he went on one of his major war on gangs initiative. And I would add that it was even like black folks who were in the police department who wanted to know why are we doing this when they, you know, doing the work that they're doing. And not to... Well, I'm just going to throw this out here because this is an important time period that a lot of people don't think about. This was also during the time when even folks know about Fred being assassinated in December of 69. But what they don't know that, like, one of the leadership, main leaders of the Vice Lords who had done tremendous work, he was indicted and sentenced to 40 years for murder, and there was no need, I mean, by all white jury, of course. But if you knew the whole history behind the brother and the work he was doing, it was like there was no reason why he would have done that. Also, the chief spokesperson for the Black Peace Stone Nation at that time was also indicted. But, you know, with the work from some other non-profit organizations in Chicago, he was released. So it was Fred was assassinated, but a whole lot of other leadership from other formations who were actually indicted at the same time. So those were among the things. And that's, by the way, and I'll get off in a minute, but I would say, like, because we were also, like, we're part of, you know, this community that was headed by Imam Jameer Abdul Amin, it was a...
Thank you.
Even on a bigger level was in that. And I just went there at that before when people forget. I know a lot of times they keep thinking my Imam Jameer is a Panther. But Imam Jameer was actually one of the ones who had organized a lot of, helped organize a lot of Muslim communities, whether or not, in Muslim individuals, whether or not they were part of the community itself, to do the work that leads to abolition. And when you use that word, by the way, I ask people sometimes what do they mean, because for a lot of New Africans, when we say abolition, it's something that, like, they can't relate to quite for that. When I'm talking to New Africans, I try to get them to envision why it is that we want independence in the first place, because we want to be able to deal with those issues using self-determination for ourselves. We have to come up with the solutions ourselves. So abolition... The concept isn't strange. It's just who brings it to us and what words they use. In this broad-based, big everybody get together abolition, I don't see it quite like working like that, because abolition in itself don't mean that you eliminate white supremacy or racist thought, conscious or otherwise, in other people.
I want to thank you. I want to take you back to, and I'm glad that you remember to raise Imam Jameer Al-Amin, who, of course, was one of my colleagues working with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And we would carry his record even back before becoming an imam, before West End community development, to his work with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and voter education and registration back in the 60s and 70s. So please feel free to talk more about his work in dealing with our self and other destructive behavior.
So you want me to go on now, or?
No, please now, yes.
Okay, right, okay. And as you said, a lot of people seem, especially some of the younger folks, don't seem to remember when he was wrapped around with the Student National Coordinating Committee, and as a matter of fact, the whole organization, they don't remember. But yes, when they were there, they were actually boots on the ground in places in the South organizing voter registration, but also organizing people around self-defense. But his speech, his organizing ability was such, which a lot of people also don't remember, is that they felt like he was so powerful that they actually passed a federal law about his activity, what was called the H.R. Brown Law, which made it a felony for going across state lines in order to incite a riot. As if, you know, us just talking to black folks about the oppression they was going through was the thing that got them to act the way they did. He was also one of the ones that was named specifically in the counterintelligence programs as one of the voices that needed to be silenced. And like I said, once he was picked up in New York, and it was while he was inside that he went ahead and took Shahada, became a Muslim. And even back then, he was not just the community here, but he was involved with work on an international level. So, and again, he had that ability to speak to organized folks. And I'd be pointing out to folks, it's like, you know, if he was against oppression back then and if he was a strong voice and had that strong kind of character, Islam just actually made him stronger. But no, a lot of people now, and they really don't remember the SNCC days, or those like yourself who do, sometimes we don't even hear y'all. We kind of like bypass. We bypass those voices that might be able to tell us about organizing, what that really entailed, you know, because that was us ordinary brothers and sisters who were out there relating to self-defense, or even just going down to the cracker store and stuff, put their life in danger, but they would do it, which ties into a lot of times when people say what they would have done. No, we don't know what you would have done. We do know what you ain't doing now. But yeah, Iman Jamil El Amin, and for folks who, if they get the opportunity, they really need to check up his history and to see why, where he is. And I believe it was because of his organizing ability and the work that he was doing, not just in the West End of Atlanta, but the work that he had organized throughout the U.S. for people who, not just in his immediate community, but for Muslims who actually felt like they didn't have a community, but they related to the struggle against oppression.
Thank you. Thank you. I want to then go to Jihad to talk about the evolution of the Jericho movement for amnesty and release of U.S. political prisoners, and how it drew on the traditions that have just been described by the previous speakers.
Yes, thank you, Sister Isiah. And once again, assalamu alaikum, listening audience. Yeah, so Jericho was an organization that was founded in 1998 by Bubba Herman Ferguson and Sister Safiya Bukhari. Both of them have passed now. And recently released political prisoner Jalil Muttaqin. And it was in the beginning, I was incarcerated myself. I was released in 2000, and 2 years after the organization had started. But it has evolved quite a bit. But the unique thing about Jericho is that it's still in existence, still championing the cases of those political prisoners, freedom fighters, prisoners of war in the United States. And that type of longevity and sustainability, you know, has to be applauded, particularly with the recognition that the United States government has been quite successful in denying the fact that there are political prisoners, and that narrative prevailing even overseas, where Sister Isiah and myself have both been overseas, and Isiah probably more than I have. and to present to the United Nations in different forms and different formats and different venues, and to see the incredulous look on people from other countries kind of like looking, oh, there are political prisoners in the United States. Ridiculous as that may sound, but and then also amongst the common masses of people in the United States, the whole reality of political prisoners kind of falling off the radar to the point where even during the uprisings in the wake of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor as such in the United States over the last couple of years, it's been a Herculean task with other organizations, including Jericho, to highlight the fact that there are freedom fighters, and also, you know, to give effort to educating activists in the United States that are righteously in the streets to realize that there has to be a firm grip and handhold and recognition of freedom fighters that's come before, and we cannot lose that connection and of our rich history of struggle and resistance, including armed struggle in the United States. So Jericho has been a vanguard organization to continue to hold that line and make this reality. And I think after going through some ebbs that the realization and recognition of political prisoners has become more pronounced. And because of in the wake of George Floyd and the black and the surgence of the Black Lives Matter movement, and just many efforts, like I said, from Jericho and other organizations, Northeast Political Prisoner Coalition, and even the Anarchist Black Cross and Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, these organizations really beaten the path to make sure that we acknowledge and recognize and even know who these freedom fighters are. And as a result, we've seen some victories. We've seen quite a few victories over the last couple of years. But to build on it, the connection, I guess, is that Jericho is an organization that's primarily spearheaded by freedom fighters themselves. Political prisoners got an eye for one, being one Ashanti Austin, being another Kazi Touré, and other freedom fighters that hold leadership positions in the organization. So not only do we champion the cases of political prisoners, the political prisoners themselves, and now Jalil Mutakin, as I already mentioned, that he's on the advisory committee. We have coalition and working relationship with other comrades. Sekou Wadinga is on the phone now, you know, so that the whole organization is represented by revolutionaries and freedom fighters that's gotten out of prison.
Kevin, we note that you are a screenwriter and filmmaker, and we know that culture plays a significant role in creating the environment for action, for educating and inspiring folks. Would you talk about what you've been doing in that vein to elevate and make visible the existence, the conditions, and the efforts to liberate political prisoners in the United States?
Yeah, thank you. I just want to start by saying that the blogger that spoke before Jihad, was that Mazi? Can you tell me his name?
It spoke before Jihad.
Mm-hmm.
Say it again.
That was Baba Masai.
Yeah, Baba Masai. He said something that was so deep, and it stuck with me. And I just want to speak on that about the youth, my generation, even like a little those that came before me. We don't have these opportunities, and we're not really connecting with our elders. We're not having these type of conversations. And then when we do get like with elders, it's really the wrong elders that's leading us astray and leading us down like capitalist world and into crime and all these other things, right? And so this is definitely like a honor and a blessing to just sit down and really just have a conversation and listen to the elders that's really was like really putting work in and not just by that, it's like really heroes and need to be acknowledged more. So I just wanted to like say that real fast. And
thank you.
And so getting into film, while I was incarcerated, I did 8 years. I was arrested when I was 17 years old. I got charged as an adult for fighting. They sentenced me to 10 years. And inside there, I've met a few brothers and a few elders that would try to give me as much knowledge as possible. But at that time, I was still young, and I was a knucklehead, basically, right? And it wasn't until probably about when I turned 21, 22, is when I got next to a few brothers. They were part of the Nation of God of the Earth. And the way they spoke, it's still to this day, it's still attractive to me. I'm attracted to words, and it was always a way. They had the way with words. So I geared towards them and started learning. And then that's when I learned about Malcolm X and Islam, and I started reading. They gave me books. And one book that they gave me was on Frederick Douglass narrative. And I'm not sure if it was in that book, but I remember Frederick Douglass once said about pictures, why he takes so much pictures and why he doesn't smile in his pictures is because he's trying to change the narrative of how black people look in this country. So he didn't want to smile. He didn't, because he's not playing, right? It's nothing to smile about, and there's nothing to joke about. And when I read that clicked, and it's still with me. And that's when I made the conscious decision. So I got to find a way to get into media, because media is the eyes for the people. This is the perception of how we look is media. They say we vandalizing when we out here rebellion, like during the Ferguson Rebellion. It's the way CNN portrays black and brown people in this country. It's these like real wicked media stations and film as well that's portraying us in the wrong light. And then there's those films that's not just being made about people, about brothers like Bubba Say Cole, Dingo, and Jihad. And like y'all was mentioning, the SNCC organization, I'm like a big advocate that Kwame Ture from Stokely Carmichael is one of the best political figures, and his political agenda is something that we should learn about in my generation, and that's where the gap is. And yeah, that's really, so yeah, so I've read that, right? So I'm going back to the question with the film. So I've read that, and I decided to do film. And since I've been home, I've worked on the prison strike, the national prison strike in 2018 when I was released. And now I'm working the national tribunal that we're going to hold in October coming soon. And I've done a lot of other scripts and plays to really highlight black life and that there's more to it and really show a different light in like the prison slavery system.
Stay close to your mouthpiece on your phone. I want to ask you a follow-up question about how do you see yourself being able to use the skills that you've acquired and the materials that you're collecting for wider distribution and more diverse distribution. When I say diverse, I mean within the community, across intergenerationally, multiculturally, so that we begin to make political prisoners, that the class, the category of political prisoners, prisoners of war and exiles, a household word, a household terms.
Yeah, so we have to, it has to be spoken. It has to be mentioned more on national television, in these movie shows. It has to be in the scripts. We have to really just get out, which I was doing in the 60s, 70s, and the 80s. We have to get out there and get the word out there, and I feel the best way to do it is with a camera. In this day and age, we're living in a technology era. the best way to get it out there is through a camera, whether it's your phone or whether it's an actual DSLR or anything to that nature. We have to document everything. I've always said this. I always like an avid person of documenting everything that happens, because we have to leave something for the next generation so they can pick up and learn and watch, and because we're not going to be here forever, right? So I always go back on YouTube and watch Brother Kwame Ture speak and get that. But and none of that would have ever happened if it wasn't filmed. So I feel we just have to constantly continue to push the word, political prisoners, and constantly, it's not just really just about talking about it either. We have to really get out there and work to release them. There's counters out there, like the COBRA, the jails, union in New York City. There's people out there fighting to keep everybody in jail and trying to actually raise this like so-called awareness that it's the slavers, right? It's the COs in there that's actually being tortured and stressed and going through all the things that our brothers and sisters are actually going through. So there's people out there that's really fighting. So we have to get out there fighting as well. And my best way to do it is through the pen and through a camera, and then other means if it ever gets to that way.
There, the next question goes to building an infrastructure for just that, getting out there. You know, you mentioned the national media. I would point out to you and remind others of us on the call and listening that it was the black press that has covered our struggle for more than 100 years. It was the black press that gave life and visibility and viability to the independence struggle. I'm often reminded of David Walker's appeal written in 1829 and sewn into the lining of black sailors' jackets so that the message could be disseminated throughout the black nation, especially in the South, where it was against the law for us to learn to read, much less to have revolutionary materials. So once the black media disseminated the information, educated, inspired, and helped to mobilize resistance, the white media, the national media, the white male-dominated corporate media notice, not because they wanted to publicize it, but because they wanted to alert the white community of the restlessness of the natives, for lack of a better term. So I raise the question to you, and then I appreciate it if others would respond to it, especially Jihad, then going to the International Tribunal and the infrastructure around it. But first, you, Kevin, the so-called new media, and how can we control what we don't own, and if we've learned anything in the past 12 months with the shutting down of Donald Trump, that there is a lesson that we need to be learning from what happened to him and what is happening to other leftist organizations like the Hood Communist Think Tank or collective that was also kicked off of Twitter. So how do you envision using new media and creating an infrastructure that is going to provide popular, public, political education.
It's outlets like this and platforms like this that needs to be more wider and broader and that we need to hear it, right? And so that's really my answer right there is we have to create our own platforms. It's Twitter and social media, they're cool, they're good, but there's a lot of black media outlets that's doing the exact same thing that they're doing. It's not really being spoken on. And that's really because pop culture, they're moving the youth, right? So whatever Lil Durk says is cool, they gravitate towards it. And my response to that is also we have to get these, we have to get to the celebrities and put them in the right hands of the elders, and they'll get them. But the answer is really just we have to create our own platforms. We don't have to depend on these social media platforms no longer, not in this era with all this, with the technology so advanced. We don't have to rely on just Instagram or Twitter or Facebook. There's so many other ways we could get our words out to the people and get it out there. So that's really what we have to do. We have to just create our own, get a camera, get some content, make some music, and really awaken the people. But I do want to say that because it really has to start with that, right? It has to start with the love for the people, because if that's not there, no amount of books, no amount of lectures, none of that, it doesn't matter how much of that you intake. If the love for the people is not there, your response will always come off. Your response will always, it will come off weird, and eventually you'll fade away because it was never genuine. So that's really, we teach that first, that this is something that it has to be. You can't try to, like, Brother Malcolm X, he used to say, masturbation, intellectuals, like you can't just learn a bunch of words and read a bunch of books and then think, okay, here we go, I'm part of the movement now. I understand that it has to really be something that you really love and that you really appreciate. So, yeah, and you do that and you'll support like media outlets like this because you love the people.
Okay. Love. Okay. That's critical, and it's one that we don't use enough. In fact, we have a tendency to shy away from it, as if it makes us appear to be soft unmasculine for brothers and for sisters.
Yeah,
makes us too emotional is the term I think that we would hear most frequently. Let me come to you, Jihad. As you know, I led the campaign to put the successful campaign to put U.S. political prisoners of war and exiles on the global human rights agenda. And while the United States, like all governments, deny the existence of political prisoners, the United Nations Human Rights Council, in each of its review of the United States as a result of that campaign, made reference to the existence of political prisoners of war, and exiles in the United States, in referring to them as human rights defenders, activists of the civil rights COINTELPRO era. and called on the United States in its satisfaction of its obligations to U.S. treaties, the UPR, Universal Periodic Review, CERD, the Convention for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, ICCPR, or the International Covenant for Civil and Political Rights, and CAT, the Convention Against Torture, to address its treatment of what we refer to as political prisoners, prisoners of war, and exiles on all of those treaty obligations that I've just listed, which is the four treaty obligations, treaties to which the United States is a signatory. How do you see the tribunal, this year's tribunal, 2021 tribunal, one, holding the United States to those demands that the campaign to put U.S. political prisoners, prisoners of war, and exiles on the global human rights agenda differ from the 1991 tribunal, where the judges at that time also denied the existence of political prisoners, and the I don't want to say sanctity. What is the word for the Republic of New Africa? Integrity of the Republic of New Africa.
Right. Well, thank you, Lucia, for that question. So I'd like to say right from the beginning, I'm very inspired by what Brother Kevin has been saying and had the honor to been working with him on the tribunal and seeing his work in the webinars that we've been having. But I think to answer that question, sister, is with the tribunal builds itself on the shoulders of those that definitely have come before us and the work that has been done and all the checks across seas from yourself and from Brother Stan Willis and many, many more that have actually been doing this work. What's unique about this tribunal is that it is an organizing tool. And our comrade, Jalil Mufti King, kind of put it in a phrase that all of us, Sekou, Masai, myself, all of us in the Panther Party have always lived by, and that's the fact that we are our own liberators. I remember coming back all excited from overseas to come back to our communities and organizations that didn't have any infrastructure or capability at all to absorb and utilize information and the strides that have been made, small as they may have been, overseas. So when we talk about holding somebody accountable, oven within itself, the tribunal won't do that as an event. But what is happening with the tribunal, it is an organizing tool. We have organized hundreds of people in dozens of organizations, and over the next 2 months before October 22nd, 23rd, and 24th, you know, probably double or quadruple that as things ramp up as it normally is before the event. But this organizing has a lot to do with how the aftermath of the tribunal. This is not just some progressive attorneys, which they are for sure, because it's being led by Nkechi Taifa, and we have the Howard University School of Law involved working on the indictment with Justin Hansford and Bill Keith Wilkinson and their whole class, all the students involved. This is miraculous developments in the tribunal and putting it together. But we all know that we are our liberators in tribunals. You know, you have these lawyers in the room and these activists putting together the paperwork and coming out with a verdict and then taking the information to some international venue, the United Nations Human Rights Council or whatever. And we ourselves, as Sekou and Masai said, our communities are in such a shambles, we have no teeth behind that. It's a document. Our communities, there's a big disconnect. This is not something existential that's being done, and then people can look at it in live stream and say, "Ooh, wow, look at what we've done." It's way more than that this time. So besides taking the document and the verdict to the different venues where it needs to go, we also will have some other outcomes for this tribunal, you know, not just to mention adding trajectory fuel, focus, codified trajectory fuel for increase and focus strategies for reparations, developing a TRC as such by any other name. You know that Dr. Matul Shakur have mentioned and struggled to establish these type of things. But we're working on getting the teeth. The teeth are people. The people's involvement from our communities, activists, revolutionaries. We've put so much critical thinking and crossing over into mainstream liberal society so that even your grandmother and your parents, your siblings, your uncles, your aunts, your brothers and sisters who in your own family may not even be involved in the things that we have been doing and haven't been involved, your next door neighbor, the store clerk. How can we look at this and how can we develop a mechanism that's going to involve these people, that's going to make it palatable, that's going to start on the baseline of explaining it and tweak what we've been saying for years and how to engage in this process without losing or compromising or undermining our own revolutionary integrity. This is the demand of critical thinking. This is what the whole phrase of dare to struggle, dare to win. Dare to think critically, dare to really, really apply yourself so that, for example, we're not just crying for some senator or congressperson to retweak the health care, Obamacare, and this and that. What plan do we have? What plan do we have besides begging and asking and protesting with policy change from people who do not care historically anything about us? What plan do we have? What acumen can we put on the table? What thinking, what development can we have to develop something on our own on a mass level that can break free from the silos that we've been working and functioning in our small little groupings with 30 people here and 20 people here, a Zoom call with 50 people there? How can we really reach the masses of people? It's not only bringing together the legal aspects of genocide, because we are charging genocide, which, by the way, people may not realize that that's even a statute, a U.S. code statute, not only violation of the treaties that Sister Ethea just pointed out, or the violation of the 1948 Council Convention on the Prevention of Genocide. Not only that, but 10 U.S.C. 1091 is codified in U.S. law. It's not even, but where's the will and determination and the peace behind to enforce the government, to make them pay, to make them be accountable? But what's going to make them accountable, sisters and brothers, is the movement of people behind the tribunal. And one of the outcomes that we're going to be discussing, sisters, and then we look forward to your input and involvement with your history and your acumen also, is develop our own Senate. And it may not be called that at the end of the day. And I'm not talking about a third party to go against the Democrats and Republicans. I'm talking about our own Senate, our own level of representation across all the contiguous states, revealing First Nation peoples and major religious organizations and not excluding anybody, and how this is representation is going to look. I mean, if these rednecks, white supremacists have done that, the Madisons, the Monroes and all that, put a document that's so historical and famous called the United States Constitution, these alcoholic, drunk, foul and moral slave masters put together a document that's cherished around the world, I'm quite sure that the revolutionary sisters and brothers of this day and age can have come up with something that's much more stupendous than that. And that's what this tribunal seeks to do. It's the aftermath. It's the outcomes of this tribunal. It's the organizing of people. It's bringing into realization that we are our own liberators so that we can get into our communities. Our community, nobody in the map cares about anything. We're the only generation where our men folk have songs calling our women bitches on public radio. You got white people driving down the road pumping the music, you know, defaming our women and black people and even women savoring and dancing, shaking their butts at this. We need a cultural revolution. We need the Kevin Steele.
We need that type of youth to change this whole fabric, because you may not be able to get on a soapbox and talk revolution, but you can start to develop a music and a culture that's going to have us start addressing each other, brothers and sisters, coming into our own African cultures, our Islam, our really connect spiritual connections with our Creator. We can, because a person may not be a revolutionary or a political in any regard, but he can bop to the music of a progressive song. They can change their clothes. They can stop making their body look like a white person. You know, all this stuff needs to really happen for us to get any attention, for us to gain any strides for real liberation. We have to get into our own communities, and this tribunal allows for us to do that also. So with that note, yes, we need to get in our communities. This is a long-range strategy. It involves political – one more thing, sister. Even the connection with political prisoners, you know yourself, you feel that how people don't even hear that. They don't resonate with that. These freedom fighters, the commentary now is that we're criminals and murderers. But when we have a tribunal that's going to address everything besides just mass incarceration and police killings, political prison, we're talking about environmental racism. We're talking about inequities in health care. These are issues that resonate. And because we're addressing that, we can bring into the midst of all that the fact that we have freedom fighters that stood for these human rights violations and to try to change our communities. We can segue into that in a way that's palatable and acceptable and people can understand, and we're educating people as we go. That's what the 2021 International Tribunal does, and that level of organizing through a tribunal has not been done yet.
Let me take you back, because you got two questions that come to my mind. You started off saying what are we doing, and then you started saying what we can do, and my question is structurally, how does the tribunal process create the space, create the opportunity, the vehicle for actualizing the, as you put it, what we can do, and how inclusive of that is it of the general community? Are there scholarships that will allow folk to be able to participate who unemployed, underemployed? How do we make sure that it's not only intergenerational, multicultural, but it's also there are no class barriers that are going to wind up excluding the masses of our people, especially the most directly impacted?
They're very good questions, sister. The most directly impacted are the ones that are organizing. So right there, is it this from the top down or middle class or anything, or from academic class? This is coming, this idea has come straight out of the mouth of revolutionaries. Straight out of the mouth of revolutionaries. Jihad Abdul Mumi, Sekou Odinga. This, so we're talking about class. You know, when you deal with something that's going to fundamentally, from the ground up, talking about the oppression of black, particularly, and brown, and indigenous people, when it's organized, when it's orchestrated and organized on that level, then from that bottom of that totem pole, doing that type of organizing, then everybody that's to be impacted positively will be impacted positively. You can't do it with a trickle down. We're doing this with a building up. So in terms of poor people, in terms of working class people, in terms of people that are activists from all races, religions, and nationalities that have that genuine concern about the life and welfare of poor and oppressed and working class people in this country, that's who this whole tribunal is made up of right from the gate. And now we are going to establish the mechanisms to bring in more people as we go forward. This is not being dictated to us. This is being dictated from us, and it's an open process, because even when you look at the organizations involved, and I can speak for Jericho, it's an organization that supports all political prisoners. So with the Bill Dunns and the Jan Limans and the Tom Mannings who's passed away and the Ray Lockerbears and all of those and the Susan Rosenbergs, Laura Whitehorns and the Marilyn Bucks and the Oscar Lopez Riveras before he was released and the Puerto Rican Nationalists and the Leonard Peltiers and all the Panthers and all the MOVE members, this is the same ilk of people that makes up the very fabric and the foundation of this tribunal. So, yes, it does cross across a racial line. It's not just a black initiative. It goes cutthroatly talking about all revolutionaries and all people that are seeking, you know, the development of human rights in this country, starting from that baseline ground level. And we have people of all races and nationalities involved with that. And so I think that this is a good start. It's an open process. We're constantly sending out emails, and the list of supporters and endorsers is growing. We have hundreds of people involved now. We started off with just three people, Matt Meyer, Seiko Dinger, and myself, in the UN lobby down in Manhattan 2 years ago with just an idea that we're discussing. And now it's happening. We have a law school involved. We have students involved. We have the Kevin Steeles involved. We have youth involved. We have black women involved. It's not a patriarchal movement. It's not one that's excluding women. Nobody can claim any of that nonsense that's contaminated other initiatives. So by the grace and mercy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, we're off to a heck of a start. We anticipate many challenges because that's why it's called struggle. But I do believe in my experience, and I joined the Black Panther when I was 16 years old. I turned 67. August 30th, I'm a Black August baby, and this is in the recent times. This type of initiative shows tremendous progress. We have involved so many organizations. Nobody's being left out. This is not a thing when you turn around and after it's over, where people that's been working in the field and doing revolutionary work for decades can turn around and say, "Man, we didn't even know about it, man. You know, they didn't ask us. We feel slighted." Nobody's going to feel slighted. And everybody's going to get a chance for their input. And all input is going to be validated. And it's not just a once. Like I said, it's just not just an event. October 22nd, come and gone, and that's it. On to the next Zoom program. This is nothing like that. Matter of fact, when the tribunal is over, that's when the real work starts. And we're going to have enough people understanding this and involved in the process to be able to not only challenge the government on policies, including genocide, and take it to the – this is an international tribunal. We have 9 international jurists. Only a few of them are from the United States. So this is an international initiative that's being able to be projected to the international world, all around the world, all the way to the ghettos of Chicago, South and Bronx, and Brooklyn, Richmond, Virginia. And I think it is very unique, sister, and it stands for so much potential. So the rest of it, as I believe spiritually, is all up to Allah.
Okay, Mike, I would go back to my question, and that is there are registration fees and endorsement fees and such. And so my question is, what accommodation is being made for folk who do not have registration fees, who do not have endorsement fees? Can they make up the difference in work? Is there a sliding scale? How do they get to participate?
Right. You don't have to endorse to participate. We're asking people to endorse. It's $25 minimum to endorse it because we're not getting Coca-Cola money. But we are doing it from a peaceful initiative. $25 is not a lot of money. $25 is not a lot of money. But, in case somebody doesn't have the money, they can jump on monthly calls anytime. They can plug into any committee. It can be involved. Nobody's going to ask them, did you endorse? You know, and there will be set up very soon, if it's not already, registration so that you can come into it. You do not have to pay to be involved in this. This is not something that's going to be a professional fight that's going to be on TV that you have to pay extra money for. This is going to be on channel whatever, everybody's channel. Everybody can jump in. We're asking registration so we can clock the numbers and there'll be some type of formal way of being involved in the process. If you didn't put a dime into this, you can still be involved. There's nobody excluding you because you don't have $25, which you do, but if you don't, if that's the case, but you have, the person has $25 if they want to endorse. But people have endorsed with much more than that, and we have got a few grants and local grants from other activist agencies and organizations, and we're coming on with our funds. Right now, we recently, Sekou scored the venue for the Malcolm X, Betty Shabazz Cultural Center in New York. This will be the Audubon. If the Delta virus prevents that from happening, then it's already going to be hybrid, live stream, and people endorsing, they can watch on live stream once this is, which all that's being set up in right now. Nobody's going to be excluded from your pay. Everybody registers to be able to get on live to listen to it. You can come to New York, first come, first serve, serve on the seating capacity of 240 people at the Audubon. Because of the Delta, it might be just 120. We're looking for overflow space. And there it is. That's how it is. That's what's happening so far. Nobody's going to be, there will be a registration process to be a part of it. But if you don't pay a dime, which I don't see why a person wouldn't, but if they don't, well, then, I, you know, whatever their reason is, we got enough to cover for you. But everybody should be invested into the process. $25 is not a lot of money. But it is enough money that we can have for $25 from, you know, 100,000 people. We're talking about $2.2 some odd million, and that's petty money, but it's a lot for the leftist movement. And it'll be the people's money because it's the people's movement.
For folks who want to be able to join the monthly calls and to keep up with what's going on, How do they get in contact with or get that information or sign up for those calls?
Thank you, sister. Thank you. Because I know I'm talking fast, but you're asking the fundamental question, which is so important. I appreciate that. So, yeah, just go or just send an email to Spirit of Mandela. Spirit of Mandela 1, the number 1. When you have a name or something, there's a number after it, that means you messed up the first email. But Spirit of Mandela 1 at Gmail. You can email that, ask to be involved. You can go to spiritofmandela.org website. You can endorse and find everything that I'm saying right now on that website. So spiritofmandela.org is the website. The email is spiritofmandela1@gmail.com, and you can say, look, hey, I'm interested. I can contribute to this. And then you will meet all the Sekou Odingas and the Kevin Steeles and the Messiah, who's even the Jihad Abdul Mumin, and you can become a part of that process. And, it's a balanced leadership with sisters and brothers working together, and we are really proud. It's intergenerational, it's interracial, but it's spearheaded by new Africans, but we're involving all people.
Speaking of folk to meet, I want to raise and lift up the name of Sister Reverend Joy Powell. We had hoped that she would be able to be with us tonight, and we hope that that having failed, that folk will, that she'll be able to, in the course of this series, in anticipation of the shut them down demonstration sponsored by the Jailhouse Lawyers Speak, that she will be able to participate in this broadcast series. But in the meantime, to go to the Jericho Movement's website in order to get her contact information. She is a police accountability activist who has been sentenced to life plus 16 years. She's been in captivity for 12 years already. She has a website, freejoypowell.org. As having been the second female co-chair of the National Jericho Movement, am always sensitive to the gender balance, as was Sister Safia Bukhari, the first female co-chair of the National Jericho Movement. I want to urge folk, if we have folk who are interested in calling in, to begin to do that as we invite all of the panelists to make what might wind up being your closing comments, but thoughts that you've had as the evening has progressed. And this time we'll begin with Baba Sekou Odinga.
Okay, assalamu alaikum again.
Well,
I've heard a number of names of political prisoners mentioned. And I'd like to just throw out a couple of more names that are very in need of our support. We have brothers like Mutulu Shakur, who's suffering from bone cancer. And the only thing that's holding them in prison right now is that the federal prison the BOP, the Bureau of Prisons, or the Federal Bureau of Prisons, is that they've taken his good time and have refused to give it back to him. If they would just give him the law, he could come home tomorrow or yesterday, really. And they've taken something like 900 and some days from him. His due date, as it stands now, is 2024. If he got that time back, that would push him right over the edge of the time that he would have to do. And he could, and he, if he's not released soon, he's going to be among our ancestors. He won't make it but so long. Also, a brother, Maroon Shooks, Russell Maroon Shooks, is another one of our political prisoners who is suffering from cancer, stage 4 cancer, who also not going to make it if they don't release him. And even if he's released, the doctors are saying he only have a couple of months to live as it is. But we have a black sister who was the lawyer, I mean, who was the judge that recently ruled that he's too dangerous to let come home, even as old as he is, as sick as he is, they won't let him come home. We need to be writing letters to the Pennsylvania, to the Brewer prisons there. I don't know what's the name they call it, but he's in Pennsylvania, and or to the Pennsylvania governor, and demanding his release, because there's no way that he's a danger at his age and in his health that he can be a danger to anybody, you know. And also Sundiata Coley, who is 84 years old, who has a number of medical issues himself that most of us fearing for his life. So I wanted to just at least mention those three there. I mean, of course, I've heard already people mention Imam Jamil. No one have mentioned Ed Pondexter or Kamal Siddiqui, who are both elders who have been in prison for the last 30, 40 years. And needs to be supported. It needs to be demanded that they be released. So for me, those are some of the parting words that I want to say, that let's free our political prisoners. Let's free all of our political prisoners. And as a people, as a nation, we can't call ourselves a revolutionary nation, even a progressive nation, if we don't demand that those who have fought for us are released to us. You know, that's always the first demand of a revolutionary movement is that their political prisoners of war be released. That's number one demand, that our prisoners come home, and we need to step up as a people and demand the release of our political prisoners.
Absolutely.
No.
In fact, go ahead.
Go ahead, sir.
I was just about to say I sent just sent a letter out to the judge on behalf of Baba Maroon Schultz, and you did pick up that folk can send out letters as well. On behalf of the other folk that you mentioned, and it's imperative. It's something that anybody can do. There's no risk. It's inexpensive. At most, it's going to cost you 60 cents, 55 to 60 cents to send it out. You don't even have to put it in an envelope. You can fold it in three parts and put a piece of tape on it to hold it together or staple it. Did you have something else that you wanted to add?
No. I guess I could add a lot of things, but mainly let's free them all. That's what I wanted to say. Just let's free all of our political prisoners. That's the least we can do is add our voices, our signatures to petitions to free our political prisoners. As you just said, it won't cost much. Just a little bit of activism will go a long way.
Mm-hmm. And these days, frequently, churches have prison ministries, so it's easy to get a statement from the various websites, because almost all political prisoners at this point in time have a web page, a Facebook page, and there's something about them on the Jericho Movement's list of prisoners that can be made into a petition or a We the Undersigned letter that we can circulate in our churches, in our fraternities, sororities, and other organizations to send to the heads of the various prisons, the judges that have the ability to make decisions, again, without risk and at minimal cost. I want to raise the name of Rhonda Bowers also, who should have been and was frankly ordered by the court to be released 10 years ago and who is still being held in captivity. Would Baba Maasai, would you have some remarks or thoughts that you had in the over the course of the hour?
Did I have
some additional thoughts that you might want to share?
Oh, okay, yeah. Actually, I was trying to jot down some notes and people kept adding good stuff. Okay, I'm glad Jihad had mentioned it earlier that the tribunal, he spoke about that. The tribunal doesn't just talk about political prisoners and POWs, and I actually think we do have to take that into account so folks know how they fit into the whole thing about struggle and the U.S.'s violation of human rights. But in related to that is like, and I think like this ties into the thing about like when we talk about the role of the media, particularly that New African or black media, we need to use that along with other means to, and as New Africans, we particularly need to use it because we need to get out there the legitimacy of our right to independence, to self-determination, because even though sometimes folks will say the thing like POWs, and a lot of times they won't even say that, they really don't internalize the fact that we actually have a right to struggle by any means necessary or any principal means, including armed struggle. So we sometimes folks mm-hmm. get to a question where, like, I would support, but they actually did something. Yeah, well, sometimes people did. And as long as we keep acting like, you know, like we don't have a legitimate right, then we can't expect the oppressor to do anything other than what they do. And we can't expect the world community to get involved. I think about some people who are very good at using the media in certain way, like people like Brother Amari, and I'm just throwing out some names. I think about brothers like Chokwe Lumumba, who was able to even go into their courts and again raise the fact that we had a right to, you know, to relate to armed struggle. And in some cases, it seems like we're not turning out those kind of lawyers. So people get into a political prisoner thing, which is cool, but again, it hasn't been like they've really internalized our right to wage struggle on certain fronts. And if we don't control those who get our story out, no matter how nice we might think they are, if we don't control that, then they're free to turn our struggle into whatever thing they want. And we've seen that happen too many times. It's good to use those stresses, but again, we can't expect for them to ask to get our message out that we need to get out ourselves. And in Sekou, when he started talking about some other names, and I always think about this, so many more that folks don't know. Including a lot of them, they are elders, and there's a lot who not, but there's just so many. When I think about that, that's when I think about the thing where I say it once in a while. I dislike the empire. I dislike the empire because of what it did to us as a people, including the fact that we go into that thing where we don't love ourselves enough to think we got a right to fight. I think about the fact that this is a system when you talk about somebody, and again, these are only a couple examples, like a Russell Maroon Schultz, who can't move. And they have the audacity to, you know, talk about what he might try to escape, the crazy stuff. And again, I can't get the names because there's too many more. But I do think when people talk about, even if we want to tie whatever we're talking about into a shutting them down, then we really need to be, like, shutting it down and calling to the U.S. to account for the many human rights abuses. And if we don't know what they are, we need to check them out. One last thing is, like, a lot of the people I mentioned, Jericho has been supportive from the beginning, and you can find either their cases or whatever on the webpage, and in some cases they do have their own websites, but you can find it on Jericho. But, you know, I guess I will kind of end with that. And again, thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you for the honor. Kevin, any thoughts that you've had of that you'd like to add?
I want to start with. I think you. I appreciate this opportunity to get on this platform and to really just speak my heart and to share this platform with you guys is an honor. So that's. I want to start by saying that. And at this moment, as we say right here, the 13th Amendment still allows slavery in the United States of America, right, in the United States of America. There's, slavery is still in existence. And not only does slavery still exist, but we have our heroes, like, really behind enemy lines. So we have to really take that into consideration that this is urgent to free political prisoners. We don't know what the hell can happen to them while they're behind enemy lines. We see what's happening to them. They're being killed, like, blatantly. They're being killed. Matula Shakur, Mumia, Wushia McGee, these brothers and sisters, they're being killed because they're behind enemy lines. They're prisoners of war. And we have to understand that this is urgent to release them and to really fight for their freedom. And we just have to really get that done. That was something I really just want to share, that we have. Oh, and also that in order to do that, though, right, really, real fast, is education, right? We have to have the knowledge of why is it, because I can say that, right, there's millions of people enslaved in the United States. And if you don't know none of it, we have to read, right? We have to read, we have to continue to educate ourselves. And we have to figure out what it is and who it is that we're going to follow as best. We can't continue to fall, like, victim to this capitalist this capitalist world, and these fake politicians and these fake leaders, these reform leaders, where they're spitting defund the police, as if the police was formed out of a slavery thing, out of slave catchers. So just defunding them doesn't even make sense, all around, right? It doesn't make sense to defund slave catchers. It doesn't make sense to defund prison slavery, right? We have to abolish all this stuff. We have to shut it down, but in order to do that, we have to have the knowledge, though. Because if you don't have the knowledge, right, Chairman Fred Hampton once said that, you just have, like, I'm not quoting him, but he was basically speaking on the knowledge, and you'll have a whole bunch of people running around if you don't have the knowledge. Once we get into power, we'll do the same thing the oppressor is doing to us. So knowledge is very important, and it's the type of knowledge you're getting, who you're getting it from, and really just listen to your elders. We have to know our elders and really zone in and listen to them, get as much knowledge and gain from them as possible, and free all those political prisoners, and free everyone, and prison slavery as well.
Thank you. Jihad, any last thoughts that you've had that you'd like to raise?
I'm going to stand by what I mentioned already. I do want to thank you, sister, for your continued work and for you facilitating this program here and getting this type of message out. So I just want to get that and to hail up my comrades, Seiko Odinga and Masai Ehanhosi and Kevin Steele, and just encourage everybody to check out and support this tribunal. It is definitely a people's initiative, and we can be victorious. The whole notion of dare to struggle, dare to win, well, I dare you to. And I'll end on that.
Can I just say,
yeah, God bless us,
I was just sitting here thinking about we're on George Jackson Radio. And I just wanted to mention, I was just looking at a statement that George said. I could read it real quick. It's a very short one. He said, "Sever your quarrels, come together." Go ahead, sis. I'm sorry.
No, please. Absolutely. Feel free.
I just wanted to read that little short statement that he said, because it's right on time, where he said, "Settle your quarrels, come together, understand the realities of our situation, understand that fascism is already here, that people are already dying who could be saved, that generations more will die or live poor, butchered half lives if you fail to act. Do what must be done. Discover your humanity and your love in revolution. Pass on the torch. Join us. Dedicate your life for the people." I changed that up a little bit. Actually, he said, "Join us, give up your life for the people." That's all I wanted to say, just because I know nobody has mentioned George much tonight, and he's always kind of on my mind when we're talking about political prisoners and prisoners of war. You know, he was a young man that was given a life sentence for $70 rock, which made no sense at all, and died in prison. You know, murdered in prison. So, but he left a lot of positive thoughts, and that was one of them that came to mind to me, because I had been recently reading his book again, Blood in My Eyes, and that was on my mind.
Wonderful.
So
wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to participate in this here. Thank you for organizing it and bringing us together. Appreciate it.
Well, I have to give organizational credit to the Shut 'Em Down Media Collective because it's their concept and their effort that has brought us together, and it's my honor that they invited me to participate along with you all. I would urge us, when we start calling the role of categories, that we include exiles. You know, even though folk aren't locked up, to not be able to move freely, not be able to be in touch with one's family, not to be able to be in touch with one's comrades is an other form of imprisonment. And that we need to add exiles, political prisoners, prisoners of war, and exiles. We not forget them. We don't, you know, we don't forget to call Asada by her name, but we don't recognize her legal status and what that means. So let's, and she's not alone, and of course we also remember our ancestor, our martyr, Nahanda Abiodun, the fact that exactly. So let's start calling their names and their status as well. It was I don't want to take away from the closing quote because I think that is so important. General Baker from Black Workers for Justice in in Detroit. He used to say we have to struggle for unity, which is what George is saying in that quote. And I think it's a superb note to close on. And we be reminded of the enemy's hand. When we think about the Ralph Brown law that Baba Masai mentioned in his comments, and the fact that no one who was involved in the January 6th insurrection on the U.S. Capitol has been charged with the Rap Brown law. That we be reminded that we are clearly still at war, and we are best served by settling our quarrels. Brother Bomani, did you have some comments that had come to your mind as you listened to this evening's dialogue?
True indeed. Free the land. First off, like thank everybody who participated. Thank everybody who participated. All the information is very, very imperative for our survival, very imperative for our independence, and very imperative for our awareness in regard to ourselves as a captive nation, as a captive people that are fighting for independence and liberation. And one of the things I want to add is that there are numerous new African political prisons on the SHU line, which is a security housing unit on the West Coast and California prison system that have been persecuted because of their new African beliefs. And they also won a lawsuit by Matope de Guma in regard to recognizing new African independent movement turning into new African as political beliefs instead of gang affiliations. So they won a lawsuit that in turn released a lot of brothers out of the SHU program. A lot of them on mainland, a lot of them that came home right now. And another thing is that we had people like Rochelle McGee and Sundara Kole, who are 80-plus years old, and they're being persecuted. And these brothers need all the attention they can get. People need attention. One of the things that a lot of people can do is write these brothers or sisters and ask them what did he want them to do to contribute to the cause of the release. They wanted people to inform, they wanted a video, whatever. Communicate with these brothers and sisters and get an understanding of who they are so you know exactly what you need to be doing in order to support them. That's how you start a support group or a support collective. And again, I want to thank y'all all for this for the very educational, inspiring, motivating panel discussion. And also that if anywhere have any loved one, comrade, associates behind enemy lines, please look into our website with georgejackuniversity.com. Again, it's www.georgejackuniversity.com. I'm going to say free the land, long live the independent movement, and long live the resistance. Free them all.
Free them all.
By any means necessary.
Again, thank y'all all.
Thank you.
No doubt.